My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. Who are we? How did we get here? Where are we going? Can there be a future in a world that at present appears so divided and conflicted? Is there a glimmer of hope that the human spirit or soul can evolve and connect with the foundational spirit found in all religions and faiths, love? If you think about it, these questions that seem to describe the here and now could have been asked any time in the last 3,000 or more years. My guest this evening on Destination Unlimited, Byron Belitsos, says the answer to these questions and more are found within what is known as the Urantia Revelation, and yes, there is hope. Byron is a multiple award-winning author and book publisher, and also editor and educator. After founding Origin Press in 1996, he worked with many leading authors, including Peter Russell, Ralph Metzner, Jim Mars, Charles Tart, James O'Day, Timothy Wiley, Anodea Judith, and Barbara Marx Hubbard. Byron is also known as the leading expert on the Urantia book and has written, spoken, and given workshops widely on its teachings, including appearances on GAIAM TV and Coast to Coast AM radio with George Norrie. He has co-authored or edited 5 books on the Urantia Revelation, and he joins us this evening to discuss his new book, Your Evolving Soul, The Cosmic Spirituality of the Urantia Revelation. Please welcome Byron Belitsos.
Good evening, and what an honor to be on the show. Thank you so much for inviting me.
And thank you for joining me. I just have a word of advice for our listeners before we start. Fasten your seatbelts and get ready for an amazing journey, literally. So, Byron, let's begin by sharing with our listeners a bit of your personal spiritual journey and how it began.
Well, thank you. I began, like most folks grew up in the 50s, I grew up in a church setting. But in my case, a little bit different because we were Greek-American and we were Greek Orthodox. So we grew up with something that was really actually a lot of fun, as opposed to, say, being Catholic or something else, which is a little bit more grim. It was kind of a festive culture with this gorgeous liturgy, this great choral music and incense and all this stuff that appeals to the all 5 senses. And, you know, Greek-American people actually have major parties, weddings, and dances adjacent to their churches. So we were always dancing and even drinking ouzo and that sort of thing. So I did not have a bad experience with Christianity, like so many of my associates, and grew up from that. But I came into the kind of the psychedelic era, late 60s, early 70s, and psychedelics. I just needed a little bit of a nudge with a few of those situations to open up to a spiritual realm. You know, just the sense of something beyond the mind, something beyond the body and the mind, opened up profoundly for me. And from that point, I was on a search. And even just in college days, when there was a lot of ferment in the early 70s, all sorts of teachers, gurus were coming through campuses. And I kind of at the same time, I got introduced to Buddhism and to the Urantia book. And I did almost really the same month almost, became a Tibetan Buddhist student and a Urantia student. And there's never been such a thing before, I assure you. But it turns out that there's a lot of harmony between fundamental Buddhist teachings and the Urantia book. You might not have thought that's the case because the Urantia book has a very serious reference to Christianity and Jesus. But as you get into it, you find that it's about all the world's religions, and it has a pretty special place for Buddhism. And so by coincidence, I became attracted to Buddhist, both Zen and Tibetan Buddhism, and the Urantia book around the same time, 1974-75. And I've been a practitioner in the Zen and Vajrayana traditions for much of my life, but I was so profoundly impressed by the Urantia book that that became my main sort of reference text, or kind of like a scripture, but a very unusual scripture. So I've always used that in the background for my path, and I soon found my way to people who were reading this text, and they were all over the country, actually all over the world. So the little communities of people reading the Urantia book were really interesting and really radical people. And so I ended up in the San Francisco Bay Area, part of a pretty fast-growing Urantia community here in the late 70s. And so it kind of went from there. And, you know, I've been in these two paths at the same time. But lately, I think I've kind of matured into a new take on the Urantia book and using that as my spiritual path. As after, believe it or not, 40 years of studying it, I've come to see that what we really need to do is work in the interpretation or the exegesis of the Urantia book to derive a new set of spiritual practices.
Now, I first became aware of the Urantia book in the late 80s, attending a New Life Expo here in New York, and I got a copy of the book. And quite frankly, I found it initially quite daunting. I don't know if my mind was ready to read that material or accept that material, the energy of that material at that time. So please tell our listeners, what is the Urantia book and how did it come to be?
The Urantia book is a large text. It's over 2,000 pages long. So you wonder, like, why do we need a big book like this? But the way it came to be was, we're told, and there's lots of documentation, but we're told by the witnesses that were there that there was a contact that was made in Chicago with a small circle of people. There were other contacts made in other places, and they were kind of nurturing these different contacts. And the one that kind of worked out the best was this group in Chicago that had as its leader a famous psychiatrist of the time, a guy named William Sadler. And Sadler led this small group of a half a dozen people who were literally getting transmissions, channelings, through a channel, kind of Edgar Cayce-style channel. If you know Edgar Cayce, would be completely in deep sleep, and they would speak through him. And that's the kind of channel that this was. And some people think that it was Edgar Cayce who was the channel, because he was in Chicago quite a bit in this period. But it's been proven that it was not, but we don't know who it was. So this channel was conversing with these people, telling them, we have new information, we want you to hear us, and we're going to sort of incubate you along, and there's a future mission. So they went some manner of years until 1924. So the way the Urantia book first began to come through in phase two, you might say, phase two beginning in 1924, is what we're told is that the papers or chapters, they call them papers instead of chapters, that they literally materialized. Now, I know that sounds kind of impossible, and there's been challenges to that, but there is the reason we think that is the case. Number one, the witnesses say that. Number two, it was in a handwriting that was not could not be connected to any of the people in the group. And these papers would come in perfect handwriting overnight. And this would be like, you know, say a 10,000 word chapter that would appear on a table the next day. And that's how these papers came through. And they thought that perhaps the guy that was the original channel was getting up in the middle of the night and writing this. But it was humanly impossible to write these perfect chapters with perfect grammar, far beyond what anybody had written before in terms of intellectual depth. And how these chapters came through was it would appear, the people would read it, and then they would ask questions through the channel. And then the celestials, the purported celestial authors, would give them a new edition, an edited edition of the chapter. And so they did this for 20 years. So the chapters would appear, they would edit the chapters, new chapter, do sometimes three drafts, and they had 196 chapters. So it's a lot of chapters.
Wow.
And again, they're called papers. And it's just utterly impossible that any human being could do this. And I say that as somebody who's edited 50 books, over 50 books. And I know what it takes to write a book. I've published almost all the books I've edited. It's just humanly impossible to do this. But it's not really all that relevant as to who they were. But the actual content of these papers is so compelling that it's been translated into 15 languages, which is a big, big job. That's 2,000-page translation. And so they finished this process, and by the end of the process, they had several hundred readers, and people would come into the kind of the office they had. They would read it, feed in questions, and then a new chapter would appear a few days later. Sometimes these new chapters would appear in a safe. They would materialize into the safe. And there are all kinds of stories of that sort. So we know some of this because there's been copyright lawsuits. And this was some of the information provided by the defendants. It was actually the publisher was sued, saying they can't really copyright it because there was no author. And in fact, they never did prove that there was an author. So a court of appeals said, you can't copyright it because it wasn't written by a human being. And so the book, the Ranch book, went into the public domain, some years later, because of these lawsuits, and we now can read the court materials to see how it came through.
That's fascinating. That's an amazing story, and we'll be back with more of Byron Belitsos and his book, Your Evolving Soul: The Cosmic Spirituality of the Urantia Revelation. After these words from the Om Times Radio Network.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hi, this is Sylvia Henderson, intuitive life coach and energy healer. Are you ready to elevate and rise way above your normal? Be sure to listen to my show, Intuitive Transformations, on Om Times Radio, Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. Get the inspiration you need to transform your life.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy, which is great because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
And we're back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this evening is Byron Belitsos, and he's the author of the new book, Your Evolving Soul, The Cosmic Spirituality of the Urantia Revelation. So, Byron, you were talking a little bit about how the Urantia book came to be. What does Urantia actually mean?
Urantia is the name of Earth. This the name of our planet, according to the angelic host of the planet. That's the name they call us.
So Urantia, would we be Urantian people or Urantians?
Yeah, technically we're Urantians. You know, we're Earthlings, but the actual name is Urantia, we're told. And, the name is actually a trademark of the Urantia Foundation, but that's the name of our planet.
Now, is the Urantia book the Bible of an alternative religion?
Yeah, some people think that it's like a new Bible, but it's not It's not a religion, really, and there's certainly no churches, there's no priesthood, there's no liturgy, there are study groups, and they're not particularly religious, they're more philosophical. And I would say the Urantia book is a guide that covers religion, but also science and history and philosophy and psychology. And so it's not really, it's a little disappointing for some people because they want to get sort of a poetic, scripture, like parts of the Bible or like the Quran or something. It's not really poetic and it's not visionary. It's very down to earth and rigorous intellectually, so much so that some people are put off by it. But I find it to be a guide for any path. For example, I was a Buddhist, and the Urantia book was a helpful guide for me. So I think of it as a reference text to reality, if you will.
What are some of the main themes of the Urantia book?
Well, that's a big question, but I would say that the number one theme of the Urantia book is that there really is a God who is aware and loving, in a loving relationship to every being in the universe, and is our creator, is known, can be known as a father or a mother, but is outside of space and time, but incarnates into space and time to give love to us and to initiate us into civilizations. And another big highlight for me is the Urantia book describes life on other planets in some detail, more detail than I've seen almost anywhere else, and saying that the same God that we think, we think is the God of, say, the God of Christianity is the God of Earth, is actually the God of all the other planets.
So is this reference to God, and we use God not in, you say God or Father, but it's actually more of a universal creative force. Is that correct?
It says that one feature of God is a force, but it corrects that, and it says that's only a portion of what God is. God is not just the force, but it has personhood, personality, not a man with a beard, it's a disembodied being, but is personal in the sense that you can have a person-to-person relationship with God. And that's one of the big reasons for having a correcting text like this, because much of our religion thinks of God as a force, and that's just very partial. In fact, that is almost a form of atheism, to say that there isn't a creator, but just a force. So the Urantia book goes in some detail about how is it possible for this creator to be self-aware. In other words, if deity is just a force, then deity doesn't even know that it is the deity because it has no self-awareness. A force like, gravity or something, gravity doesn't know that it's gravity. And so what kind of a God doesn't even know that it exists? Because human beings, we have self-awareness. We know that we exist. So God must at a minimum know that God exists, that he or she is God. So if a being is self-aware, then that being is personal.
Now, you mentioned the creator of life elsewhere throughout the universe on different planets and so on. Does this lend itself to some of the theories that have come out over the last 40 or 50 years about ancient astronauts and ancient aliens, or is there a tie-in between these?
Yeah, there very much is, and I've been a speaker at Contact in the Desert, the big UFO event where they talk about ancient aliens. And the Urantia book also has a version of ancient aliens. It's really, really fun and really interesting to read about. And we can get into that if you like.
Please, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the stuff in Ancient Aliens is about, you know, extraterrestrials that came to Earth. And there's no doubt that they have. But in prehistoric times, you know, certainly in prehistoric times, there were ETs that were here, that were, you know, monitoring the planet as it was evolving and, you know, noting that life is here, human life is here. But there's also, the Urantia book is a vast revelation about the angels. And if you really want to know about angels, you must read the Urantia book. It is so much fun to read about the different kinds of angels. And what it says is that at a certain point in the evolution of a planet, the angels will come to the planet incarnate, like avatars. You know, like Krishna, for example, came in a body, embodied being, and they will be teachers to us. So according to the Urantia book, every planet has a core of angels that incarnate as teachers in the very, very earliest stages, before, you know, before there's writing, before there's mathematics, before there's, you know, sewage systems. And they literally come to create a civilization by incarnating as humans. So we had such an event 500,000 years ago, which, by the way, matches what Zechariah Sitchin says, that there was the first group that, according to him, came to the planet around that time. But, of course, he says they were extraterrestrials from planet Nibiru.
Right.
But it's the same timeline as Sitchin's timeline. And second, Sitchin says there was a rebellion and around 250,000 years later, which is the Urantia book says that too. So it's pretty amazing lineup in terms of the timing. But that's where the Urantia book departs greatly from Sitchin in stating that these were benign extra dimensional beings, and they created a city in the on the Persian Gulf that was the inaugural capital of planet Earth. That was the first civilized settlement on Earth, but there was a rebellion in 250,000 years ago, and that's where we get the ancient alien notion that something went wrong on the planet, and this rebellion was a rebellion of the angels. And so the Urantia book, one of the reasons it's a little complicated, a little bit daunting, is we needed to have something that would explain this distant history so people would know why we have such a difficult and warlike and, you know, so much criminal activity and disease on our planet. Why, you know, is every planet like this? Does every planet have nuclear weapons? And, you know, does every planet have genocide and holocausts and wars in Vietnam and World War II? You know, and what the Urantia book says, that is highly atypical. Very rare for a planet to have genocidal, you know, warfare. They have warfare, but they don't have nuclear holocausts because they're guided by the angels and by spiritual beings and spiritual forces. But on our planet, we lost our angelic guidance.
Is this similar to the tales that you find in the Mahabharata and other works where these wars take place between the gods?
Yes, very much. And it's an area, a very interesting area of research that I'm going to be doing, actually, in the Mahabharata and other sources. Yes, and all throughout the world, that there was kind of wars in heaven, because the Urantia book details that sort of the bad angels, they're known as the followers of Lucifer. They were in the majority, and in the minority were the angels that were following spirit. And they literally, it wasn't a physical combat, but it was a subtle kind of energetic warfare throughout these eras. And so what happened is that the so-called good angels had to kind of get into the background, because in the foreground were the rebellious angels, and their leader became the planetary leader, the planetary angelic leader, which the Bible says, you know, that there's the god of this world is the devil. And that's a mythic way of saying what the Urantia book says, is that sort of the chief angel of the planet went to the dark side. Yes, and being on the dark side, that means that the inhabitants of the planet are going to be in trouble.
Fascinating story. We're going to continue our conversation with Byron Belitsos, who is the author of Your Evolving Soul, The Cosmic Spirituality of the Urantia Revelation. Byron, please tell our listeners how they can get your book and find out more about you.
My site is evolvingsouls.org, but it's got a hyphen. evolving-souls.org. But you can simply go to Amazon and look up the title, Your Evolving Soul. And at the moment, the book is in Barnes & Noble and places like that.
And we'll be back with more after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Are you in an interfaith relationship and thinking of getting married? For 18 years, Reverend Lori Sue Brockway has been creating personalized, loving, and romantic ceremonies for couples of all faiths and cultural backgrounds. Reverend Lori Sue's sensitivity to the needs of interfaith couples is reflected in the compassionate and inclusive way she addresses the concerns of parents and families. Reverend Lori Sue is also the author of several best-selling books on interfaith weddings and wedding vows. Selected as one of the top interfaith officiants by New York Magazine, Reverend Lori Sue serves couples in the New York metropolitan area and beyond. Find out more at her website, yourinterfaithwedding.com.
Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at ascendinghearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Join me, Maggie Chula, on Mondays at noon Eastern for Mastermind with Maggie. Let's work together in a mastermind. We can resolve life's problems and create goals for the future. Build action steps empowering you to create your life in partnership with your divine source of light, your soul. Manifesting your goals can be simple and easy, so come with your problems and leave with a plan. The Akashic Master Teachers and I are waiting to help you.
And we're back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this evening, Byron Belitsos, and he's the author of the book, Your Evolving Soul, The Cosmic Spirituality of the Urantia Revelation. So we ended the last segment talking about the Urantia book and the stories that are within the Urantia book, and how it parallels a lot of the ancient alien theory, and also sort of attests to the fact what many archaeologists are finding now, that our concept of historical time and civilization is really out of whack, isn't it?
Yeah, because it really goes back, you know, a couple hundred thousand years ago, and there was literally a civilization way back then. And in addition, the Urantia book has this other amazing ancient alien aspect, which is what some people call Atlantis, but what the Urantia book calls Eden, the Garden of Eden. Yes, and a lot of people don't know that it has this really fun to read section about Adam and Eve and the Garden of Eden, and really gets very factual about it, stating that every planet has these two big things that happen. First, they have this teaching core that comes that helps humans do real basic things like land, you know, like writing and the wheel and bricks, firing bricks in ovens and pottery. They literally teach that to primitive humans living in primitive bands and tribes. And they build a world capital. And then somewhat later, another incarnation occurs. And that's each planet gets its own Adam and Eve. So if you know, if you went to Sunday school as a kid and you heard about Adam and Eve and you feel like that's sort of, you know, crazy mythology, just imagine the idea that every inhabited planet has an Adam and an Eve. And the Adam and Eve beings, it's actually a couple, are here to, believe it or not, interbreed with the natives. And what they do is they create a second world capital, which becomes sort of the biological world capital. They come as embodied beings, and they're sexual beings, and they create another civilization with their children. They actually have thousands of children that are of a certain race and racial type, which is a bit more advanced than the indigenous races.
That's fascinating, because it sort of explains why in Genesis, where they talk about Adam and Eve having Cain and Abel, and all of a sudden there's these other people. Where'd they come from? Well, there's your answer.
Yeah, this tells you, you know, they when Cain went over to the land of Nod, mm-hmm. and got a wife.
Where'd she come from?
Yeah, what were they doing over there? So, you know, so the Urantia book really straightens that out in much detail, to state that there was actually a group known as the Nodites, N-O-D, Nod, the land of Nod, and they lived adjacent. And the location of Adam and Eve was on the island of Cyprus, which is near Syria. Mm-hmm. And the island, part of the island of Cyprus, has sunk into the ocean. And it sounds like the story of Atlantis. And they had a civilization there, and the Nodites were just across the channel in the area of Syria, today's Syria. And they had a rebellion as well. So the rebellion angels on the planet subverted Adam and Eve's mission, and so that mission also went astray. So the first two great missions to the planet defaulted. So if you read the Urantia book and you wonder, why do I have to read this thing? This is the early history of the planet that I find far more interesting and plausible than Sitchin or other ancient alien ideas. And I've also been on Gaia TV talking about this, and people really enjoyed it. Because there's been an expedition to the site of Eden that the History Channel covered in 2007, and I was part of that. I published the main book about it. I didn't write it, but I published it. And that was that they found an artifacts at the bottom of the ocean that proves the Urantia book's thesis somewhat, that there was a civilization right next to Syria, between Syria and Atlantis and Cyprus. That's where Adam and Eve were with their huge civilization 37,000 years ago. And that is the source civilization for the Sumerians, the Egyptians, and what we sometimes call the Atlanteans.
Let's take this a little one step further. What does the Urantia book say was the reason for this these angels going to the dark side, for Lucifer? What was the reason behind this?
In the heavenly realms, there is an administrative structure of angelic beings who, you know, think of angels as sort of ministering to, you know, individuals like a seraphim would minister by your side and support and nurture you. But there are angels that are administrator angels. And in one in a million cases, an administrator angel can go astray. That's literally a million, because in the local group of inhabited planets, which is 6 million inhabited planets, according to Rancho Book, there's been 3 cases of this happening. So it's less than one in a million, where an administrator angel comes to question the entire cosmic plan. And this happened in our area, our zone of planets. And there's, we're told, 37 planets went into the rebellion following Lucifer, whose lieutenant was an angel named Satan.
Mm.
And Satan was sort of the liaison to Lucifer. So he came to the went to these planets and recruited the chief administrator angels to their side. And their side said, it was a pretty harsh thing. I mean, they said, you know, there really is no spiritual, there's no God. There's just a force. There's just a universal force that evolves human beings and angels. There's no creator deity. That's a myth. I mean, it's a pretty vicious thing for an angel to come up with. And these are brilliant, brilliant beings. Just like the Bible says, Lucifer was a brilliant angel of light. And indeed, he was. But he became sort of cosmically insane. And sorry to report, the Urantia book was led, or the planet Urantia was led by this type of being in its early history, prehistory, right on down to the incarnation of Christ.
What does the Urantia book say about Jesus or Christ?
It says that Jesus is the local universe creator. That there are deities who are creators of large sections. Imagine like the Milky Way having a creator being, a deity, who is the originator of life. And Christ is an originator of life in an organized sector of the Milky Way that has up to 10 million inhabited planets. However, he also has a female consort. So the Urantia book is really great because it states that there is a female Christ. It's actually a couple, a pair, a deity pair, male and female, but these are divine beings. And so throughout the universes and the galaxies, there are these creator, they're called creator sons. They're sons of the Father. They're sons of the Almighty God that are out in space creating life. So when one of these beings incarnates, it is a really big deal. It's a very, very, very high being incarnate. It's nothing like an angelic being incarnating. This is a creator deity, and they only incarnate once in their local domain. So we became the luckiest planet in the local group to have the highest being, the creator, incarnate here and live a human life, because we were so backward because of the rebellion, they had to come up with a compensation.
If I'm interpreting this correctly, then you're saying that Jesus or Christ, as we know Jesus or Christ in Christianity, according to Urantia, is one of many sons of God.
Many, because the universe is much bigger than the Bible. You know, the Bible is just one inhabited planet, but the Urantia book says there are 7 trillion inhabited planets. And so just for administrative sake, you divide it up into local, what they call local universes. So there's 700,000 local universes in the universe. So there are 700,000 of these pair, male-female deity pairs. And so our local pair is known as Christ, and his consort is known as Mother Spirit. And the female Christ does not incarnate. Only the male does. The female doesn't have to incarnate because she is omnipresent. She is in all things. She's already present as the earth, as all, as life. So she's already here, but not as a person.
Fascinating. My guest this evening on Destination Unlimited, Byron Belitsos, and his book, Your Evolving Soul, The Cosmic Spirituality of the Urantia Revelation. And we'll have more with Byron after these words from the Om Times Radio Network.
The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
This is Terry Van Horn, and I want to invite you to join me for my weekly radio show, Healing Light, on Om Times Radio, every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Healing Light, we want to bring love, light, and blessings into your world. You can find out more about us at www.healinglightonline.com. Blessings.
You wanted to see me?
Yes, please, have a seat. So here's the thing. When this company brought you on, we took a chance on you. You didn't have that 4-year college degree we typically look for.
Right.
But we gave you a shot anyway. And since then, you've worked incredibly hard and given it your all.
Thanks.
You've been an important asset to the team, but I don't think you can be an intern here anymore. We want to hire you.
You're serious?
Absolutely.
Find your next great employee. Introduce yourself to the grads of life. Who are they? Talent worth knowing about. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
I won't let you down.
I know.
Don't miss out on a resource many innovative companies have already discovered. Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. Brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
And we're back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this evening, Byron Belitsos, is the author of Your Evolving Soul, The Cosmic Spirituality of the Urantia Revelation. Byron, prior to the break, you talked about the Urantia story. Now, in your book, Your Evolving Soul, you talk about how the Urantia book talks about where we're going or where we could be going. First of all, how do you define soul?
Yeah, I define soul in line with the Urantia book, but also in line with other sources like Carl Jung and other philosophers like Ken Wilber and some others, and Hindu thinkers, for example, that the soul is the part of the self that evolves through our decisions that we make. And in particular, a decision, what they call decision action, a decision that leads you to act on something is soul making. So whereas a lot of people think of the soul as their spirit, it's their identity, their spiritual side of themselves, That's a pretty vague idea, I find. And I think of it as a very specific thing that evolves and has within it sort of like a container of our memories that are important to retain. So it's not the memories, you know, that I had a hot dog for lunch. It's the memories of the poignant and meaningful things that you've done in your life. According to the Urantia book, each of those events in your life is so precious that a record is made of it inside of you. It literally is a deposit, sort of like laying down grooves on vinyl on an old record. It lays down a memory of a kind of energetic representation of the experience that you had. And so this is what I also call the experiential soul. So what this is really the best part of you. But even if you're not, you know, such a stellar person, if you're just a regular person, it's the part of you that can survive when you die. And so, you know, it's obviously the death of the body is death of the brain. So there couldn't be a future life or a future incarnation if there wasn't a kind of a soul brain. So your material brain is dead, but there's a metaphysical brain, you might say, that survives death. And if that weren't the case, if there weren't your memories, then there'd be no you to survive death. So how do we know this person has reincarnated? Well, because it has the identity of their life, their memories in their past life, and something has to record that. So how does that get done? It gets recorded, and much of my book explains how that happens. That in order to understand how the soul gets laid down in this record, you have to have some mechanism that does the recording. And according to the Urantia book, that part of us is the spirit part of us. So it's essential for folks to understand that the soul is different from the spirit, whereas in a lot of New Age thought, for example, it's the same thing. We use the word interchangeably. But the Urantia book and other sources make clear that the spirit is actually a fragment of God. It's the Atman, as they say in Hinduism, the Atman. It's the Buddha nature, as they say in Buddhism. It's that part of you which is totally transcendental.
Like the Ruach in the Jewish faith, in the Kabbalah, the Ruach.
Yeah, the Ruach in Kabbalah. And in Kabbalah, you know, the Ka and the Ba in Kabbalah come from, you know, from Egyptian religion, as you know.
Right.
And the Ka refers, I always get this mixed up. The Ka refers to the spirit self, and the Ba refers to the soul part. And the Egyptians did have this distinction in Egyptian religion. And in Judaism, they had it, but they really lost it. They didn't really stick with that idea very well in Judaism. And in Greek religion, Plato and Socrates, they also have the daimon, they call it, right? Mm-hmm. The daimon. And that's distinguished from the psyche, where we get the word psychiatry. That's the soul in Greek religion. Distinguished from the daimon, which is this voice that, you know, Socrates said, I hear this voice that talks to me and tells me what to do and tells me what to do. That's not the psyche doing that. That's not the personal self. That's something beyond the self. That's the higher self. But we have to distinguish this higher self from the evolving soul, and we have to distinguish that from the material mind that has just the ordinary memories.
Many theories of the soul look at it as triune or trinity, and you know Freud's model of the mind, he talks about the id, the ego, and the superego. Now, you say that the evolving soul, you call it a sacred triad. Please share this concept with our listeners.
The your answer book is, it takes time to learn this, but I encourage people to be patient and go through these steps. And my book will introduce you in an introductory way to what I call the sacred triad. Because just think about it this way, you know, you have the human self. You look at somebody, you know, when I just like you, in your case, you have such a distinctive personality. I met you at the book show. You have this amazing voice and presence. And if I saw you, you know, 5 years from now, I would recognize you. I would just know you as you. There's something unique about every person. And that is not the soul either. There are three parts. One part is the unique personality. Another part is the spirit self that we discussed. And the third part is the evolving soul. So these three parts are needed in order to have and understand our spiritual lives. Because if there wasn't a unique person, you would just have like a generic person. You just have like robots or something that were uniform, because the spiritual part of the self is uniformly spirit energy. And the mind is uniformly the mindal. Of course, it's conditioned by our genetics. But there has to be some part of the self that is really stable, that is recognizably unique. And the Rancher book and other sources tell us that each person is unique in eternity, uniquely created, unique and loved, beloved by God for their beauty of their uniqueness. And that's why God sort of incarnates a part of God as your personality. So there's really two parts of deity that we have. There's the uniqueness of the self, and then there's the spirit self, which is the general spirit energy of God. So there's two parts of God inside of us, not just one. And the part that's ours, that's under our control, is only one of those parts. That's the soul. And the way the soul works, as I understand it, is that as the ordinary person, their ordinary material mind, and that's a material mind, it's an electromagnetic mind connected to the brain, has the ability to make decisions because the person has freedom of will and freedom of thought that is a divine gift given to them in their unique personality. So I know I said a lot there. I'm going to backtrack and go over this. When a baby is conceived, the child receives from God, from the center of the universe, their personality. If you've ever had a child, you know that each kid is really unique and really special and really lovable. And that's the part of the self that has free will, that freely can choose, and that distinguishes you from animals. Animals don't have free will in this regard. They have some freedom, but not freedom of thought, freedom of spirit, freedom of imagination, and freedom to choose between options, or choose bad options or good options, any option. And that freedom is part of the self that comes from external to nature. It's not in nature. It's supernatural part of the self. So the soul evolves because the free person makes decisions that the spirit self inspires. As it inspires those decisions, it then recognizes, oh my gosh, this my companion has made the decision to get married. That's a great moment, and I'm going to hit the save button and save that moment. The energy of that moment, the memory of that moment, is saved into the soul as the soul. So each decision you make that is poignant in that way, that's important, is saved. And even the decisions that aren't that brilliant, those are still you. They still express your unique life, those, it's, imagine there's this entity within you that's hitting a button that saves each of those events for your eternity.
Byron, what message would you like listeners to take away from Your Evolving Soul?
Yeah, the message is mainly about how beloved we are. Not only that there's a transcendent God in the center of all things, but that God has an indwelling quality, indwells in each person as their spiritual self, their higher self, and has incarnates in us as our unique personality that's unique to us, but it's a divine part of us, and that it's up to us to make the choices that grow the soul, that create our future life, our future incarnations, and our ascension. And we have an eternal life because we're creating an immortal soul down here on this crazy earth, or Urantia.
My guest this evening, Byron Belitsos. He's the author of Your Evolving Soul. Please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about your work.
My book's available wherever books are sold, Amazon especially easy, but in Barnes & Noble and New Age bookstores. You can get it everywhere.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight, and definitely you have to come back and share more.
I'm happy to come back. Thank you so much for a rousing time. It was really a pleasure.
And thank you for joining us this evening on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.